Peace, y'all. This is Big Guru, Gifted Unlimited Rhymes Universal, in the house right now on Hard Knock Radio, okay, baby?
This is Dolores Huerta, and this is Hard Knock Radio.
I am Elizabeth Petito Martinez here with Hard Knock Radio. And you are?
I'm Yuri Kochiyama with Hard Knock Radio.
This is Congresswoman Barbara Lee. When I'm not throwing down on the floor of Congress, looking out and fighting for your rights, I'm listening to Hard Knock Radio.
David D. hanging out with you, Hard Knock Radio. And one of the things I want to talk about this afternoon is, well, we're actually continuing a conversation that we've been having in the aftermath of the 2012 election. The end result is the re-election of Barack Obama. And we've been talking with folks from all over the country to find out what are the next steps. And one key group of people that are now front and center, who were demonized at least for the past 3 or 4 years, laws were passed with them in mind, are those who are Latino, our brown brothers and sisters throughout the entire diaspora. Because of the quote-unquote browning of America, we've seen legislation passed like SB 1070 and HB 5086 in Alabama. And we've seen mass deportations and all types of demonizing of folks who actually were here long before many of us who were passing these laws even showed up in this hemisphere. So now, in the aftermath of this election, everybody wants to court the Latino vote. And we wanted to gather some people around who are on the front lines of dealing with their community issues, both locally and nationally, and find out what that really means. And in the studio with us, we have Pablo Padres. He is with 67...
Sueños.
Sueños. He's an organizer here in the Bay Area. We have Fabiana Rodriguez. She is a cultural worker, an artist, an author, somebody who has been on the front line and dealing with actually SB 1070, among other things, working with a lot of the Dreamers. We want to talk with her. And on the phone line with us, somebody who's been organizing artists, thousands of them all over the country, to boycott places like Arizona. His name is Javier Rodriguez. I want to welcome you all to the show. And I don't know where to start, but let me start off with you, Pablo. Barack Obama gets elected. And the next thing you know, everybody on Fox News who once upon a time would put a brown face up on the TV and say, this is the enemy, and all the xenophobic rhetoric would come out of their mouth. Now they're like, we need immigration reform. We need to be inclusive. We need to bring these people in. Now everybody wants to make nice. Your thoughts on this?
Sure. What we've seen electoral-wise, and not just in this election, but in fact it's almost been about a decade's pattern, is increasing impact of the Latino vote. And people talk about that as though it's a phenomenon that just happened, like a sleeping giant, all this kind of stuff. Like it's just miraculously. What's happening is the children of NAFTA are becoming voting age. That's what's been happening for the last elections. 1994, NAFTA was passed. There was a mass migration initiated by it. We are now exactly 18 years past that, right? Mm-hmm. So what's happening is a lot of the folks that are born here starting to become voting age. And this election was the first one to see, like, literally a whole bunch of people that migrated because of NAFTA conditions or whose parents migrated because of NAFTA conditions become voting age. And they remember why they're here. And they remember that their parents don't have papers. And they remember a lot of what has gone on. And so they're very active. And that's what's causing a large part of the spike in the Latino voter turnout. And Republicans have been marching off beat to that rhythm for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think where I'd love to move the conversation is what are we going to do with this moment, right? Republicans just got slapped in the face with reality, and it's going to take them a while to wake up and realize, and yeah, they're going to start talking right, but it'll take a long time before they start doing right.
Right.
Now, on the other side of the edge, if we look at what happened in the last 4 years, we saw the Tea Party move the Republican Party to the right.
You mean the
Tea Party moved the Republican Party to the right, and we saw the Republican Party in large part move the Democratic Party to the center, right? So that changed the entire political discourse to the right. What we need to have now is something like that on the left side, right? That slap in the face that the voter turnout gave to the Republican Party is moving them to the middle, but we also need a progressive grassroots movement that is going to do a good version of what the Tea Party did to Republicans to the Democratic Party, because we can say all day how great the rhetoric is, and we can talk about DACA, but at the end of the day, there were 1.5 million deportations.
Right.
At the end of the day, we ramped up the Border Patrol. There's been 21 murders on the border in the last 2 years. There's no accountability for the largest police force on the planet. That all happened on a Democratic watch. And so that party needs to be pulled to the left, tugged, pulled by the ear.
Right. What is DACA for people who don't know?
DACA is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And contrary to popular belief, it is not an executive order. I want to say that like as many times as I can. It's not an executive order.
Right.
It was a memo passed by the Department of Homeland Security. And it's a lesson learned because this is the only movement we saw in the last 4 years from the Obama administration on immigration. The only movement in a positive direction.
And he won a lot of votes in 2008. I was down in Texas. I was around the country.
With promises of immigration.
Where he was promising in many of those places. And the phenomenon was him going to a lot of younger people, many who may have been offsprings of you know, NAFTA mm-hmm. parents, NAFTA migrated parents, and really, like, talk to your parents, and you vote for me, and I'm going to really fix things. And they were being hunted on both sides.
And the lesson learned and why I want to talk about DACA is because, you know, we have a lot of critiques of DACA. It's not enough. It's a first step. There's a lot of questions that are unanswered. It was clearly very electoral campaign focused and just trying to get something done that might sort of whitewash the fact that we had 1.5 million deportations. But that said, people don't know the story of how DACA happened.
Right.
Undocumented youth movement folks sat in on Obama's campaign offices in several cities. And it was like literally within 48 to 76 hours of that starting that Obama was in front of an entire press conference, you know, slapping together a policy and
right.
responding to that kind of pressure.
Well, one of the people who is behind the scenes and part of that type of sit-in, or at least knows a lot of these folks, would be Faviana. You know, we got a chance to talk with you, Favi, when you came to the Democratic Convention. Some of your colleagues, about 10 or 11 of them, that were on the Undocubus that came up there, got arrested as you were on the air with us. And you've been working a lot with the Dreamers. You've been down in Arizona with Javier, who's also our guest. Your thoughts on this, being courted now after all this sort of heartbreak and
yeah.
Demonizing.
Yeah, well, I think what we also saw this election is that there's a shift overall on how people feel about immigrants. I mean, if you notice, there was an exit poll that said about 65% of the population believes that there needs to be a pathway to legalization. And I think DACA, like many of these shifts, have also happened because people have been putting out their stories and really pushing on the fact that Obama is the deporter in chief, and really saying, hey, these deportations are unjust and they need to stop. Films like Lost in Detention, the boycott in Arizona, was all key to getting people to see, you know what, being anti-immigrant is not where we want to go. And so I do think there's been a cultural shift happening as a result of the activism, but also of the artists, the cultural workers, the folks who have been pushing through their music, that we need to move towards a pathway to legalization. One thing that Pablo pointed out, which is important, is that, yes, we have been shifted to the right, which is towards criminalization. And this is very similar to what's happening with the expansion of prisons, the war on drugs. So in order to get towards legalization, we have to completely take back the narrative. And so in terms of next steps, I think not only do we need to move towards legalization, I mean, on one of his interviews with Jorge Ramos on Univision, Obama had said one of the things he most regrets is not passing immigration reform. And this is as a result, because this time he was not kind of handed over the vote on a platter. There was a lot of criticism, and the ongoing meme was that he was not enough. And in fact, there was huge disappointment, and that was very visible. I'm happy that groups like Andalon and the Dreamers, United We Dream, Dream Activists, have really been key in pushing out that we are not happy with the president's policies. And in fact, he is acting more like a Republican when it comes to immigration.
Go ahead.
In terms of next steps, I also think we need to understand that Latinos don't just care about immigration. In fact, Latinos have lost 2/3 of their wealth in the crash.
In the foreclosures.
In foreclosures. We are getting hit by education. When you look at our numbers and you look at the cuts in public services and all these cuts in the name of austerity, we are going to be the ones to suffer from that. And so I think we need to, as Latinos, position ourselves to understand that the cuts in public services, including education, are our attack on our children.
Let me ask you another question. I think when we talk about Latinos, we see it as one monolithic group. And right. maybe you can speak to the fact that many who are caught up in this web of xenophobia as well as, you know, actual deportations are coming from a wide swath of countries with many different backgrounds. And many of them are the results of very deliberate foreign policies, NAFTA. But it's not just NAFTA. It's also intervention into countries and doing regime change and all these types of things. So when I wind up talking with a lot of folks, it's story after story. Like, you know, we were here. We were happy. All of a sudden, the U.S. came in and threw away our government. And the next thing you know, we were under dictatorship. We're here now. So can you speak to that sort of?
Yeah, it's globalization. And that is what, you know, when Pablo referred to NAFTA in 1994, it was the beginning of globalization. You had, as a result, free trade agreements just happen over and over all over the world. The other thing is that immigration and the displacement of people is a world phenomenon. I mean, you have the Europeans, the Germans, the English also saying, where did our country go? Where did all these migrants come from? So you have a global displacement of people and just overall market forces being able to move labor so intensely that the demographics of the world are changing. It's not just the United States. It's Canada, it's England, it's Germany, it's Japan. And so I think that part of this is that as we've allowed transnational corporations kind of set global policy, what's followed has been mass displacement and climate change.
Yeah, and I want to get to that. We're going to talk about climate change in a minute. I want to bring Javier in, but my last question to you before I do that, you have an incredible poster about butterflies, you know, where you symbolize that as migration. And can you maybe give us a little bit of backdrop about migration in a historical global sense that is not just somebody trying to get to the U.S. because they want to work at McDonald's, but it's almost a natural way in which we as human beings behave.
Yes, I think the right to move and the right to move in for survival or for work or even just to find your best self is a right of all human beings. And I think what's been great about the emergence of the butterfly, which is being used with immigrant groups across the country, but has also been used by Latin America for years, is that the monarch butterfly can freely go from Canada to the U.S. to Mexico back and forth because they need to change habitats in order to survive. It's a natural part of the way that they survive and they swarm together. And how can we reimagine immigration as something that now in our time is natural? People's need to leave their habitats in order to just for a simple change is something that rather than criminalize, let's celebrate that and let's see the beauty in human survival.
But in the West today, we see a free world that has achieved a level of failure unprecedented in all human history.
Been exposed in his house of blues. The real emperor without clothes has much to lose. Road weary troubadour, maybe I'm an ambassador. Not to be confused with some spook or bastard by the door. Before I got paid by the word, now it's deferred. New Dust Bowl poet, y'all ain't heard it, now you heard. Showed y'all I ain't tired, damn sure ain't quiet. Plenty of things to teach about, I'm reaching to the choir. Damn, my man, one at a time, this beat's fire. Face told me, Brent, you be bombing the place. To the bob, bob is back, bob. And weaving and bobbing and spilling like Womack, Marley, and Dylan. Deep songs, front page of your life, this is you. Invasion of your mental vacation and your crew. This ain't brand new just because y'all ain't never knew. I spit politics on that wall where the people get screwed. Non-stop
sweatshops so you can retail your ass off without fail. Then some you get setback, blaming immigration exploitation. With your lack of information by yelling wetbacks. Somebody acting forever 21, can't hide, can't cry, can't run, can't blame it on a crack. Or fight back without a passport, Millennium Gestapo, border control, the new contact sport. Y'all call them immigrants and take them to court. But look at your own hood and your own lack of support. Some of these DJs have no idea what they're playing. Some of these rhymers don't realize what the hell they're saying. So I let them chase the cash, honey, without a plan. Forget Johnny was the man in black, well, I'm the black and man. This is modern day slavery and part of the plan. With all due respect, sir, tear down that wall, man.
Javier Gonzalez from the Soundstrike, who is down in Los Angeles as we speak this afternoon. What's your thoughts on being a political football? And by that I mean nobody really wants to sit down and get your expertise, but everybody wants your vote. So now everybody wants to talk to Javier, Javier's family, Javier's friends. But it's all about the votes and not about your intelligence and what you have to contribute. How are you navigating this situation, and what are you telling the people that you work with? And I really want to ask that question from the standpoint, I also should mention that you are a union organizer. So you're really dealing with folks on that front line in a very different way.
Well, yeah, and actually, to add a little bit to that, I also, you know, coming out of the janitor's union where I worked for 7 years, I actually founded, you know, one of the largest and most well-funded and effective Latino voter registration and get out the vote program. So I work almost all the major elections in California and in other parts of the country getting out the vote. And I think what we're seeing is the famous, you know, Winston Churchill quote when he was trying to figure out how to get out of his imperial battles and the Revolutionary Wars in Africa, and he decided that he wanted the gold and they could have the black president. And he said, appeal to their taste and they'll appeal to your interests. So I think that we're starting to see the color of change, so to speak, without the substance of change. And I think what you're seeing right now is all of the sort of sellout middle-class Latino organizations scurrying to the White House and the Capitol Hill to define the quote-unquote Latino agenda. So, you know, you're having all the $200,000 a year Latino lobbyists who work for a variety of, you know, organizations, some, you know, some cool, some okay, and some straight sellout, trying to redefine what the election results were. And you know, I've seen it for years. And so I think the key is, you know, sort of Fabiana touched on it, is that Latinos are, you know, what defines Latinos isn't just that they come from another country. It's that they tend to be renters, they tend to be without health care, they tend to make under $45,000 a year, didn't graduate from college, have kids in public schools, and want government to play a more active role in their lives. And I think there's a great book called La Nueva California and A California State of Mind that outlines years and years of polling that shows that Latinos really are, you know, have more of a sort of Latin American social democratic ideology and view of government and politics. And I think that, you know, that's really what scares the Republican Party. It's not having 12 million more brown people, it's having 12 million more liberal democratic voters. Just like, you know, sort of why they give up on the black vote, because they figure if they don't move to the left, they're not going to get it anyway, so why even court it? So I do think that, you know, it's an interesting time, but at the same time, it's time for grassroots leaders to keep issues in the forefront, like folks have been talking about, to talk about the home foreclosure mess, to talk about really Obama's policies in regards to the home foreclosure mess. One of the things that Obama said early on, by the way, is that he wanted to correct the titling issue of home foreclosures, which is this gigantic scam that's kind of hard to explain. But one of the ways that the banks have been taking hundreds of thousands of homes with all this, you know, robo-signing and stuff like that, and that has overwhelmingly affected blacks and Latinos. So there's a lot of issues to keep at the forefront. I think the more that we can put those issues out there and educate the public in creative, you know, and sort of cool and insightful ways, the more that, you know, it's the same sort of strategy that if people aren't aware of what the issues are, they just sort of pick the cult of personality. And we can't allow, you know, what the Latino middle class Democratic Party machine to redefine the agenda of really what is a working class community.
You know, we're talking to people all over the country, Javier, and L.A. is home to the largest Latino population in the United States. It's ground zero, and it's also a bellwether city in terms of a lot of policies and things that happen there. So does the rest of the country in many respects. Dealing with the demographic shift, that's something that Los Angeles really had to deal with and recognize maybe about a good 10 years ago in terms of what this really means. And maybe you can explain some of the triumphs and some of the pitfalls that have come from that city that may be inform us as to what to look out for as it moves into other areas as we see the browning of America.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, L.A., you know, sort of what's happening in Alabama and in Arizona, there's a model for it, which is really California. And a lot of the front center of it was Proposition 187 and 94, where you had, you know, these racist radio DJs like Ken and Bob and all of these right-wing.
On Clear Channel, everybody. That's a Clear Channel station.
Oh, and would donate thousands of billboards to right-wing causes. But, so, you know, we had the sort of the shock and awe fight. There's another great book called Paradise Lost. It talks about the succession of events in California. You know, you had the earthquake, you had the fire, you had the rebellion of 92, you had a general depression, I mean, recession. And, you know, people decided to blame the Mexicans as a typical and effective historic strategy in the United States. But what came out of that was this, you know, this super strong resistance, this massive multi-year, multi-organizational and financial commitment to educating people about becoming a citizen. There was these myths that existed that you had to, you know, spit on your home country flag if you became a citizen, and you had to, like, get through that. You had to get people to take the English test, the written test, then actually become citizens and actually educate them about voting. So L.A. has been a brown city with blacks and Latinos for 30 years. But effectively, it was after, you know, 8 to 10 years of organizing and education, and I used to go to countless citizenship fairs where you just educate people on what the process was, and working with the media outlets. It's really a tool that was created by Reagan and the Cuban white Latino community to basically turn Spanish media into entertainment exclusively. And so it took years to just get them to even put on PSAs. But at the end of the day, you had this huge influx of Latino activists, grassroots community leaders, Villaraigosa then, Fabian Nunez, Marco Fireball. You had all these people who came from organizations that began to run for office. So it wasn't just that we got brown people to vote for. We got progressive, community-oriented, and well-connected Latino leaders. And, you know, some of them have gone this way or that way, and that can all be debated. But that's really up to us as base communities to hold people accountable. And so that's the reaction. For every action, there's a reaction. When you attack a community, when you let them know that you despise them and you hate them and you want to, you know, inflict harm, which is really what was crazy about the Arizona, the Georgia, and the Alabama bills, is like, they were so malicious in that it was so clear that these folks want to inflict harm on you.
Right.
And we can't let, you know, basically, I mean, I hate on these people big time, but we can't let these straight up sell out, like, lame ass middle class Latino organizations like National Council of the Raza redefine the political agenda as, like, Obama wants you to stay here, comma, washing dishes, making minimum wage, losing your house, and sending your kids to school or bad school. So sorry. So I think it's up to us to maneuver the changes in our community. So, like, and I love how Fabiana and Jeff Chang talk about it, so that cultural and ideological changes parallel the political and demographic changes, or I should say the demographic changes, and that's what makes really a political change. So, you know, I think we can't just have ideas. We have to have a method for implementing those ideas.
What I want to do is I want to take a break, and I want to come back. That's the voice of Javier Gonzalez of the Soundstrike down in L.A. We have Pablo Padres here, that is here in the Bay Area with us, as well as Fabiana Rodriguez.
I am resistant.
All of the youth
fool to seeking the truth and seeing right through their costumes. Who know when the mainstream news crews do interviews, they human cartoons. Just paper thin, ink and imagination, man's creation, more like subliminal training or political campaigning. And the nation's opinions daily swaying with justifications of slaves. I wonder why it doesn't coincide with the high rise of the homicides that we facing. Deterioration of education, it takes a backseat to world domination. That's why we hustle in the backstreet, plus even pack heat just to eat, no exaggeration. On the front lines, that's where they station our bloodlines to die. When today right here in the Western Hemisphere, they still living in fear of you and I. When them immigration comes crack down, concentration camps all around. Now more reason to keep increasing, policing, decreasing the freedoms of black and brown. On every town in every desert, ghetto and mountain range, times are strange, glorification of impatient ways. Who really to blame? Colonization and crusades, insane cowboys causing pain. Human beings bring change, we are resistance.
We're back here, Davey D, Art Knock Radio, having a great conversation in the aftermath of the election. What is going to be the next steps taken by many in the Latino community? And we have a great roundtable of guests here. And before we went to the break, I was asking about climate change and the environment and some of the things that we're experiencing. The environment is something that's affected just the movements of people. We're seeing it boomerang because, you know, our country goes down to Latin America and cuts down lots of trees and siphons off a lot of resources, which forces large amounts of population to come here. We have big corporations like Monsanto that will go down to many of these places and patent the seeds, and even, you know, I'm just learning about even the way that people farm. They, like, you know, y'all water the tomatoes three times a day. Well, we're going to patent that and trademark that, and you're going to have to buy a license just to water your own plant. So can we speak on that? And I'll start off with you, Faviana, then go to you, Pablo.
Yeah, so what people don't know is that what NAFTA did is created an open door for organizations and companies like Monsanto to go in and disrupt food systems, to consolidate food systems, and really implement factory farming. Now, what's important is also factory farming and farming overall is something that Latinos have a huge presence in, not just in the South, but here in the United States. We make up the largest part of the workforce in agriculture and in the meat industry. And so what happens to food directly impacts us as workers, and it impacts us in the way we live our lives in throughout Latin America. So the influx of companies like Monsanto and kind of the big six agribusiness companies has created mass displacement. It's also created a consolidation of food that has affected our worker rights. It's affected our health. Latinos, our number one cause of death is food related. And so when you look at, you know, displacement overall, and you look at also that Latinos, if you poll them, Latinos actually care about climate. They care about the environment. For years, many of our communities have been plagued by things like asthma, which is a direct product of dirty pollution, environments, right? Pollution. We also are affected intensely by food. We have some of the highest growing numbers of obesity in our country. So we understand the way in which food and climate is affecting us. I think one thing that Hurricane Sandy offers us, which is a little different than what happened with Katrina, is that it actually calls into question the role of government in creating, number one, building our public infrastructure, and getting ready to understand that climate change is changing the way we live, and that how do we create an infrastructure that is responsive to that and responsive to people.
Right. Well, even more importantly, and then I'll come to you, Pablo, is if you have climate change, most people move to certain areas because right. of the climate or the accessibility. So we live near the water, we'll live here. The weather is nice, we'll move here. They have tornadoes there, so we won't move there, we'll move here. But if you have a place like New York that is all of a sudden getting these huge hurricanes, right, guess what happens? You start to have a displacement of people. People right. go, I'm not going to live there anymore and deal with more hurricanes. If now we're below sea level and that makes a difference, you know. Mm. So you start to have this movement that happens, again, coming back to right. this whole thing of migration. And if we were already doing damage in other places that result in crazy weather, droughts, all sorts of things, which means that people go, hey, you know, we used to have trees, now it's a drought, I'm moving up north. Now we got to see how we're all connected, you know, and so it's not an isolated scenario.
It's not. And actually in the Southwest, in places like Arizona, all throughout the border, they've been getting very strongly hit by climate change. I mean, what you have happening there is one of the examples of how the weather is changing. And also our brothers and sisters throughout the Caribbean and in many places throughout Latin America have directly been experiencing this for years. And there is leaders throughout Latin America, like in Bolivia, who are really looking at how do we talk about this in the context of the rights of Mother Earth, that we cannot be doing this kind of destruction without understanding that the Earth also has rights.
It's a living organism. Pablo, what would you add to this?
Well, I'd just like to say, and, you know, I know it's not popular to not say something about American exceptionalism in every conversation we have about politics in this country, but I actually think that to be cynical a little bit about what's possible here and to be really sort of admiring what's happening outside of these borders, people call it the third world. I like to call it the two-thirds world, right? That's where most people are and where the rubber meets the road on a lot of these issues. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm seeing the most exciting, independent, you know, connected to the earth, connected to each other sort of work. I'm Puerto Rican and Ecuadorian, and I'm so proud to say that today around global warming, because in Ecuador, we had one of the most entrenched battles to fight Chevron for what they did to the Amazon, and it won, and they're still trying to fight them in the courts, but it was a really strong movement led by indigenous folks of what happened to their indigenous, you know, patrimony. In Puerto Rico, they tried to make a gasoduct that would have cut through the island in one of the most beautiful, pristine sort of mountain countryside that there is,
right,
and a grassroots effort of community orgs to still know and value the earth and are still connected to it, fought it back and won there too. So I'm really excited about that. I think that's where the leadership is going to come from. Now, on the ugly side of things, the sad reality is that I connect this to immigration because I think you can't look at global warming and not realize that the most massive displacement of people and the most massive migrations that we're going to see in our lifetimes are probably going to be related to global warming, are probably going to be related to climate change. And in that context, we have to be real worried about what it means to militarize the border and what it means to take the sort of attitude that we've taken in the last
like
4, 5, 10 years.
It's that movie, The Day Before Tomorrow, whatever, where they start off showing Latinos not being able to come into the country. But then once the climate change hit and everybody from the United States wanted to go to Mexico, and they were like, nah, let's close these borders. So what we thought was funny could actually be a reality now, you know, especially since we are the big cause of a lot of what's going on.
But I just can't say enough about how concerning it needs to be, because what's going to happen in the next few weeks, not too far off, is we're going to restart like it never happened, this conversation about what immigration reform looks like. And some of the same tired, salty attitudes about border enforcement and the Republican Party trying to get as many deals to the military-industrial complex as it can out of an immigration reform packet are going to come back to the table. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. That's what we did. And what was really important to understand is that when this conversation started in the last 4 years, there was a shift of that conversation in the beginning from some kind of legalization for most people with minimal border enforcement to like massive, massive ramping up of the enforcement and toning down of the legalization. And actually, even without passing immigration reform, the country, the Republicans, got what they wanted. Obama ramped up even without congressional action.
Right.
Border Patrol doubled. Drones fly over the border. It's like as militarized as I think any land border has been in the history of time, right? But I know that when we come back to the table, they're going to talk more enforcement, more ramping up. So I think that that's the big fight to gear up
now. So this comes back to the second question, you know, and I had asked this to Javier. You can chime in after Pablo does on this, Javier. I'm the government. I'm looking at a bunch of brown faces. I'm looking at you all. I want you all to come. But basically, my agenda is I just want you all to vote for me. Shut up, be quiet, and just vote. You know, vote for Dave. Put him in office. But your narrative that you're talking about, we need to move from border enforcement and militarization to climate change and what that really means with people being able to move from one place to the other for survival, as Faviano is saying, that needs to be the narrative. So what I'm talking about is we talk about American exceptionalism, which means that I know everything and you don't, and we don't recognize the genius and the ability of people who have darker hues to read the world, have a politic, have a clear understanding, have a scientific analysis of what's going on. How do we make sure that that genius, that intelligence is really included into the conversation? Not the politic, not the butt kissing, but the actual intelligence of, you know, Native peoples, indigenous people being able to go, this is what will happen if you do A, B, C, and D. And we don't put words like, oh, that's primitive, or that's superstitious, or that's some other demeaning type of description to describe people who have been here for centuries and have actually been pretty right on how to, you know, work the land and work the world.
Well, I'm glad that Hav has already thrown a whole lot of rocks at some of the establishment, Latino, you know, sellouts in some case, folks. Because honestly, in my opinion, I couldn't agree more with Jeff Chang, with Faviana, and this idea that the cultural shifts have to precede the political shifts. And 67 Sueños is all about. That's why we do murals. That's why we tell stories. And we also do actions. But our biggest problem hasn't been shifting the cultural narrative. The fact that 2/3 of Americans believe in a path to legalization is not a new statistic. This is the last time they've polled it. But actually, this has been true statistically for like 5 to 6 years. Every time they've polled Americans on how they feel, do you prefer an enforcement-only approach or do you prefer a path to legalization? Every single time the majority has voted for a path to legalization, and it has been growing, so we have been creating a cultural shift. But that's not enough. The biggest thing, the elephant in the room, and to sort of remix the Malcolm X House Negro, Field Negro critique to today, is that, you know, on the ranch, a lot of brown folks had the folks who got paid by the ranch owner to handle business and to keep things in order. And then you had all the folks that were in the field actually picking, actually milking, actually doing everything else that needs to be done on the ranch. And today we have that with the sort of Latino establishment. They are our biggest enemy in terms of real social reform, in terms of real people power. We don't lack people power, and we don't lack a culture that's ready to hear this message. What we have is these power brokers that shift that narrative every time they want to.
So you have what we call a poverty pimps or a punditry class.
In 2006 and 2007, this is not said nearly enough, this country saw the largest marches in its history. Not in recent history, in history. The anti-war movement in the 60s that Berkeley loves to death has nothing on what happened in 2006 and 2007. There were millions of people in the street. San Diego, where I was at the time, had more than 50,000 people in the street. San Diego's never seen 50,000 people in the
street. Well, L.A. had a million. I was down there.
Right.
Yes, I saw that.
So it happened all over the country. That's people power. That is what we need to push government. What happened is that immediately this crew that Javi's talking about ran to the media and to their outlets and to their nonprofit establishment, their Democratic Party politics, and started shifting the decisions and the narratives and the direction of that movement. And all of a sudden it was, yesterday we march, tomorrow we vote, right? So grassroots organizing is yesterday's news. That's all done. You know, we can go to sleep, hand it to us,
so they
and
shifted
we'll
the move. So they shifted the movement to movement for election.
Exactly. And then we got a great president that had a great promise, but we no longer had people in the streets. And in 2009, the May Day marches were pathetic. In 2010, they were smaller. Wow. So now we have a movement back to that. And the leadership that I was talking about does have to come from very independent grassroots folks and not like look to. I know it's convenient sometimes that we go, oh, you know, and I'm in a nonprofit, so I know, and I try to check myself on it. But I know it's easy to say, well, these cats have a full time job. You know, they can be at the meeting doing this, that and the other. But you lose independence. And that's what happened in 2006 and seven. And that's our biggest fear right now in this moment. Well, once again, there's a window of opportunity for people power to really push this conversation to the left and toward where the people are.
Right. Javier, anything that you would add to this as we get ready to close out and get last words?
Well, yeah, I just to echo, you know, what Pablo just said, you know, I was actually the co-chair of the big march in 2000, end of 2005 and 2006 in L.A., and I remember, you know, it was like one of the most incredibly, you know, fulfilling and inspiring periods. People don't really report on all the marches that were being done at the time, and after the big May 1st, you know, rally where, you know, literally, like, I mean, we're on stage and, you know, had Tigres del Norte and Paquito La del Barrio and all kinds of athletes and feeling this exuberance. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, everybody was talking about, voter edge, voter edge. But I was like, what the hell are you talking about, voter edge? It's just like surround the mayor. Then I started seeing that all these grants were dropping for voter edge, civic participation, voter edge. And you see, like, when the money shifts, the policy shifts because, you know, that's where you go is where the grant is. And, you know, all of a sudden these PSAs about voting and organizations that had never seen, you know, bigger than $30,000 grants were getting $200,000, $250,000 to do voter edge. And then half these organizations are just chumps, and they were just standing out the citizenship ceremonies. You know, because in L.A., man, every month, 6,000 people in the a.m. and in the p.m. become citizens. And it just became this shift. And it was really the intelligentsia, the middle-class Latino intelligentsia working for, you know, the Chamber of Commerce and the Democratic and the Republican parties redefining the Latino agenda. And it's up to us to snatch these people by the collar when we see them doing this stuff and say, you don't speak for us.
Right,
but it's harder to do because they have access to TV. So, you know, nothing replaces good old-fashioned organizing.
And, you know, this is very parallel to what went on in the 60s. We often heard that the Black Power movements and everything, people were in the streets. They gave everybody a grant. They went home. I'm going to take a break, and we're going to come back and get last wrap-up comments. We're back here, Davey D, hanging out, Hard Knock Radio. Insightful conversation with our guests. What do we do in the aftermath of Barack Obama being elected, especially if you're Latino, if you're brown? What does that mean? And our guests have been Pablo, Faviana, and Javier, talking about everything from, you know, co-opting movements to making them just become election campaigns to climate change. And as we close out, I'll start off with you, Pablo. Where do we go from here, man? Where do you see it 6 months from now, a year from now?
Well, I got to operate from a place of hope and a place of how could we change this world to make it a better place for climate change, for immigration, for all these things. And I think that our country's stale right now, like, to be completely honest. I think that our country's really stale politically, really stale culturally in a lot of ways. And while I understand that the Latino experience is very diverse, and sometimes I have problems with even a blanket term for our community because it's so diverse, I think that the issue of immigration does cross-cut and touch the whole community, and it also happens to be the issue that marginalizes most and victimizes most, literally right. Puts the most dead bodies on this country's doorstep. I think it is what the civil rights movement issue for Black America was for Black folks, for brown folks today.
Right.
And so I think it's really important to focus energy on it. I think it's a victory that would create a kind of consciousness and a kind of rebirth and sort of renaissance of, like, a dynamic, empowered Latino community that is desperately needed, especially as the changing demographics of this country happen. So I put my energy there. I put my faith there. I also see that youth are always at the forefront of movements, right? They're crazier. They have less to lose. They haven't yet been talked into accepting the leadership deals that their middle-class parents sometimes, or that even if they're not middle-class, their parents have kind of been trodden down and beat to accept. So when I look around, what I see is migrant youth all over the country doing amazing things.
Right.
And I want to tap into that energy. I want to build with that energy. I think that they have the potential to be this generation SNCC. I think they have the potential to quit everything we're talking about and totally revitalize and change how we're doing it. And it will impact conversations about education and the cost, conversations about global warming, conversations about worker rights. It'll impact all of those things. But I think that leadership is the most promising thing right now and where I want to throw my weight.
And I appreciate that. And we should remind people, if the civil rights movement, which we saw blackface, you know, where laws got passed around that and everybody benefited, if the immigration becomes the continuation of that civil rights struggle, remember there are a lot of other people that are also caught up in that. Haitians here in California, a lot of Asians. And so it has the potential to do what the civil rights movement did, open doors for a variety of people. Javier, I'll give you about a minute, the last word, and then I'll let Faviana finish off.
Well, I think that, taking a lesson from the Occupy movement that was a great counter-narrative and it was very inspiring, but I think that one of the things we can learn from it is that it seemed to interject into the national debate about economics and about power in America, but it tried to give answers that, you know, and there were two all over the place. And I think maybe it's time to maybe not look for answers but look for the right questions and to really look at who's going to get behind immigration reform and why. And, you know, in asking the right question, it gives us an opportunity to work with a variety of people to really get into issues, to educate people, and to build from there and organize. And I think that that's sort of what we have to do, because even, you know, a lot of people know in California, a lot of the progressive environmental laws that we're talking about, they came from the tourism industry, not necessarily from a lot of the grassroots organizing that was done. And it's okay to have those types of partnerships, because sometimes they can be more effective. But if you ask the right questions, who elected Obama? Who funded Obama's campaign? Why are the Republicans and Fox suddenly talking about immigration? Who's speaking on our behalf in Washington? We can start to jump in there and then hopefully expose some stuff and see if we can do some counter-organizing.
That's real talk, and I appreciate that. Javier from The Soundstrike, and Faviana, last.
Yeah, what I'm really excited about is that, you know, I'm not sure how the policy wins are going to play out for us or how soon they're going to play out for us. I think we really need to think about how we invest in culture and how we look at how artists, cultural workers, filmmakers, musicians, MCs, dancers, performers are starting to kind of put out these new ideas, are intersecting the ideas of intersection and climate change. In Maryland, for example, they won. The Dreamers had a big victory there, thanks in large part to Black voters, but they were also the first ones to say, hey, you know what, it's not just about immigration. We also have to look at climate change, and we have to look at these intersections. And so I think that, I have great faith in that artists are going to be kind of invited to the table and begin to have a vision for what kind of country we want to build, one that not only, you know, looks at humane policy for migrants, but also addresses the education crisis for so many of our young people, looks at how many of our folks are without health insurance, looks at how they're suffering with their homes. How do we look at a kind of cross narrative and begin to let people know, you know, what's good for the what they call the new demographic, right? The Latinos, what's good for Asians? We didn't even talk about Asians, and yet Asians turned down in record number, and they Asian Americans care about immigration as well. How do we begin to understand that, this new kind of demographic block is going to be the folks to intersect those right. issues? They're the ones who are going to make those connections. And so how can we tell our stories in a new frame?
And I think, and I appreciate that, and I think, you know, I'll change it up a little. It's not going to be, are you invited to the table? It'll be whether or not you invite them to the table, because you all are definitely in the forefront. And I think, you know, that's where things are headed. I want to thank our guest. Pablo, I know you all have a big march and demonstration coming up in a couple of weeks against the Stormy Pueblo, which has been running around doing ICE's job. So I'm going to invite you to come back on our show to talk about that and what that's going to look like. Faviana, good luck, because I know you're getting ready to go to the Facing Race Conference in Baltimore, and your big panel is on Saturday, and people in the Baltimore area should definitely look out for the Facing Race. And Javier, the Soundstrike, how do we get a hold of that?
You check out the soundstrike.info online.
There you go. I want to thank our guests. We'll take a break.
Yo, what's up? Yo, I heard there's a fence over there on the west side, man. There's no Minuteman at that fence either, man. We can get through right there, dog. Don't need a trip.
Yo. I come across the border, you stop me, get pasa. When I'm in the courtroom, I'm guilty, get pasa. Something goes wrong, who you mad at? My raza. And why you tripping? I built your new casa.
Cada vez que miro, el día está frío. Como lucio brillo.
Let me see your light is in the air.
Things get ugly when we talk about race. Then they get scary with the color of my face. Don't put me on the news, it's a damn disgrace. You took away my land and complain about space. Let me put the subject out here in the open. Treat me like an enemy, you got me in your scoping. Nowadays violence is the key to success. My people work in this country and take away your stress, yes? 187, Mr. Terminator, Governor, whatever, I'ma call you a hater. Aztec Maya, combination fire. Nick
got our warrior, diminish all the liars. Phone tap wire, soldiers for hire. Third world country, a first world desire. Bravo conmigo, porque no hablas español. No te pongas bravo, you bitch, ni caracol. Everyone, what we need to do is get along. One day it'll hit you like I'm hitting on this bong. I come across the border, you stop me, qué pasa? When I'm in the courtroom, I'm guilty, qué pasa? Something goes wrong, who you mad at? My raza. And why you tripping? I built your new casa.
Cada vez que miro, el día está frío, como lucio brillo.
Let me see your light is in the air.
Cada vez que miro, el día está frío, como lucio brillo.
Let me see your hands up in the air.
Cada vez que miro, el día está frío, como lucio brillo.
Let me see your light is in the air. In the air.
¿Qué pasa? ¿Qué pasa? My raza. ¿Qué pasa? My raza. ¿Qué pasa? My raza.
Pueblo tu destino, porque es bien sabido que quieres liberarte, y quiero indicarte cuál es el camino. En la unión está la fuerza, y yo estoy contigo. Y los otros pueblos, el chicano y el borincua, alan el día. Día de la justicia, en que todas estas tierras, ahora ocupadas, sean rescatadas y que sean liberadas. Crecerán los niños para heredar todas estas tierras negro de mar a mar. Adelante, pueblo, en su lucha digna. A la larga venceremos. Esa es nuestra consigna. Crecerán los niños para heredar todas nuestras tierras negro de mar a mar. Crecerán los niños para heredar todas nuestras tierras negro de mar a mar.